Side 12. Down Below Station by C.J. Terry, continuing on page 401. Down Below loomed in vid, and they were still accelerating all out. Approach warnings were flashing. Australia was the bigger ship, the more at hazard. Screens and lights flashed. They were fired on. Part 7. Pell, Blue Dock, Europe, 2400 hours main day, 1200 alter day. No! Mazian hovered by his post, a hand pressed to the earplug while his bridge swirled in chaos. Hold where you are. Hold for troop pickup. Warn all troops. Blue Dock is breached. Pick up any trooper on green, no matter what ship. Over. Acknowledgements crackled back. Pell was in chaos. A whole dock breached. Air rushing out the umbilicals. Pressure dropped. Debris floated between Europe and India. Troopers who had been on the dock, dead and drifting, sucked out when an access 2 meters by 2 was ripped from its moorings without warning. The dock was void. Everything had gone. Ship's locks had closed automatically the instant the depressurization hit, cutting off even those closest to safety. Q, he said. Report. I have given the necessary orders, the imperturbable voice came back. All troops on Pell are moving for green. On the run. Pori. Pori, are you still in link? This is Pori. Over. Pass orders. Destroy Down Below base and execute all workers. Yes, sir, Pori said. Anger vibrated through his tone. Done. Mallory, Mazian thought, a word which had become a curse, an obscenity. Orders were not yet disseminated, plans not firm. They had to assume the worst now and act on it. Disrupt the station's controls. Get the troops off and run for it. They had to have them. Ruin anything useful. Sun. Earth. It had to be now. And Mallory. If once they could get their hands on her... Part 8, Pell Central, 2400 hours main day, 1200 alter day. John Lucas turned from devastation on the screens to chaos on the boards, tech scrambling frantically to relay calls to damage control and security. Sir, one asked him. Sir, there are troops trapped in blue, a sealed compartment. They want to know when we can get to them. They want to know how long. He froze. He had stopped having answers. The instructions did not come. There were only the guards who were always about him, Hale, and his comrades who were always with him day and night, his personal and unshakable nightmare. They had their rifles on the techs now. He turned, looked at Hale to appeal to him to use the helmet comm to contact the fleet to ask information, whether it was attack or malfunction, or what had sent a fleet carrier ripping over their heads and 3 others on its tail. Of a sudden, Hale and his men stopped, all at the same time, listening to something only they could hear. And all at once they turned, leveled rifles. No! John screamed. They fired. Part 9. Down Below Main Base, 2400 hours main day, 1200 alter day, local night. There was little chance for sleep. They took it when they could, Man and Hysa, crouched the one in Q-Dome and the other in the mud outside, sleeping as best they might, shift by shift in their clothes, in the same mud-caked, stinking blankets, what sleep they were allowed. The mills never stopped, and the work went on day and night. The flimsy doors of the lock slammed, one after the other, and Emilio lay stiff and still, apprehension confirmed. A sound had wakened him. It was not time to wake, surely it was not time. It seemed only minutes ago that he had lain down to sleep. He heard the patter of rain overhead, heard a number of boots crunching the gravel outside. There was no shuttle down. They roused both ships of them, out only for loading. Up and out, a trooper shouted. He moved. He heard moans about him. The other men wakened, winced in the strong light which swept over them. He rolled out of the cot, grimaced with the pain of strained muscles and blistered feet, onto which he pulled water-stiffened boots. Fear worked in him, small things wrong, different from other nighttime rousings. He fastened his clothing, put on his jacket, groped at his throat for the breather mask which always hung there. Light hit his face again, drew groans of misery from others. He walked for the door among others who were going, outside, through the second door, up the wooden steps to the path. More lights in his face. He flung his arm up to shield his eyes. Constantine, round up the downers. He tried to see past the lights, eyes watering. On a second Tron made out shadows beyond others of their number brought up from the mills. Shuttle had to be coming down. It must be. No need to panic. Get the downers. All of you out, someone inside shouted. The doors opened then straight through, deflating the dome crest as all others were herded out at gunpoint. A hand found his, childlike. He looked down. It was Bounder. The downers were up. All the other Hysa had gathered, bewildered by the lights and the hard voices invoking their name. All of them out now? A trooper asked another. We got them all, the other said. The tone of it was wrong, ominous. Details became strangely clear, like the moment of a long fall, an accident, a time stretched thin. Rain and the lights, the glistening of water on armor. He saw them move, rifles lift. Hit them, he yelled, and flung himself at the line. A shot popped into his leg, and he hit the barrel, shoving it aside, following armored arms to armored body. He bore the man over, ripped for the mask, while armored fists flailed, battered his head. Rifles went off. Bodies hit the ground about him. He scooped up a handful of mud, down below's own armament, slammed it into armor faceplate, into the breather intake, found a throat under the armor rings, and kept after it, while shouts and downer shrieks rang through the rain. A shot went overhead, and the man under him stopped fighting. He scrabbled in the thick mud for the rifle, rolled with it, and looked up into a gun leveling at his face. He squeezed the trigger and slagged it before it aimed, the trooper staggering under fire from another quarter, screaming in the pain of diffused burns. Fire from behind, near the dome. He fired at anything in armor, heard downer shrieks. Light hit him. They were spotted. He rolled again, fired for the light. No skill at aiming, but it went down. Run, a Hysa voice shrieked at him. All run, quick, quick. He tried to get to his feet. A Hysa seized him up and dragged him until another could help, into cover by the dome, where his own men had taken cover. Fire was coming back at them from the hill, the path which led to the landing field, their ship. Stop them, he yelled at whatever of his men could hear. Cut them off. He managed a limping run a little distance. Shots hissed into the puddles about him. He slowed as others of his men kept going, tried to keep going. You come, a Hysa shrieked. You come me. He fired as he could, ignoring the Hysa that wanted him to retreat to the woods. Fire came back and a man of his fell, and fire started coming from the flanking woods, hitting the troops, driving them to run again, and he limped after. The troops had reached the hill crest, disappeared over the shoulder of the hill, had surely called for help, reinforcements, for the probe's big guns to be trained on that path to meet them the moment they charged over it. Emilio cursed tearfully, used the rifle for a crutch, and some of his men kept going still. Keep low, he yelled, and struggled further, with visions of the ship lofting, of all the helpless thousands who waited by the images. The troops had distance on them, and armor that protected them, and once over that hill. They came up over it. Fire lit the dark, and most of his men flung themselves down at once, squirming back to cover from a fire they could not face. He crouched, came as far as he could, lay on his belly to look down from the hill into the fire of the heavy guns. The ground itself began to steam downslope. He saw troops regrouping against the probe's lighted hatch, under an umbrella of fire that laced the slope, beams steaming through the rain and boiling earth as well as water. The troops could reach that safe haven. The ship would loft and hit them from overhead. Nothing, nothing that they could do. Shadow flooded toward the field, behind the lines of rallying troopers like illusion, the pouring of a black tide toward that hatch. The troops silhouetted in the hatchway saw it, fired, must have called the others. They started turning, and Emilio opened up fire on their backs, heart chilled with the sudden realization what it was, what that other force must be. He scrambled to his knees, trying to get a shot at the troops in the open hatchway, despite the beam slicing the hillside. The dark flood kept coming over their own fallen, carried the doorway, and suddenly gave way, retreating desperately. Fire bloomed in the hatchway, spread and swept through the troops and the attackers. The sound came, and the shock hit his bones. He sprawled in the mud and lay there. Firing had stopped. There was silence. No more war, only the patter of rain in the puddles. Downers babbled and chattered and scurried up behind him. He tried to gain his feet, meaning to get down there, where people of his own had fallen, blasting that hatchway. Then the ship's lights came back on, and the engines rumbled, and it began to fire again, guns sweeping the slope. Still alive. He raged at it, hardly felt the hands which crept about his arms and sides and tried to carry him. Downers, bent doggedly on helping him, chattering and pleading with him. Then the ship shut down, both the firing and the engines, rested dormant, lights winking, but with the hatch gaping dark and fire-blackened. Downers pulled him away, threw arms about him as he tried to stand, and dragged him when his leg went out from under him. A Hysa's thin hand patted his cheek. "You all right, you all right," a voice pleaded. "Bounders." They crossed behind the hill, Hysa gathering up more of the dead and wounded, and suddenly human figures were coming toward them out of the woods, humans and Hysa together. "Emilio," he heard. Maliko's voice. Others were running toward him behind her, men and women left behind. He struggled for a few running steps and reached her, hugged her insanely, with a taste of despair in his mouth. "Ito," she said. "Ernst, they got them. The blast jammed their hatch." "They'll get us," he said. "They'll call down the bigger stuff." "No. Got a comm station in the bush. One message, one fast message to Base 2 comm unit at the gathering. It'll get them out of there. We got them." He let go because he could, began to fade, looked back toward the ship, invisible behind the hill. There was another flare of engines, ominous thunder, a desperate ship trying only to save itself. "Hurry," she said, trying to help him walk. He came, Hysa hovering all about them. "Hurry," the Hysa kept saying over and over again, surrounding all of them, some walking, others silent, carried by the Hysa, over the face of the hill and beyond, deep among the rain-dripping trees, up into the hills. They kept moving until fence grayed and blackened, and he sank down into wet bracken, was hauled up again by a dozen strong hands and carried at last, almost running. There was a hole in the hillside, a place among the rocks. "Maliko," he said, irrationally fearing the dark, close tunnel. They took him into it and let him down, and in a moment arms gathered him up again and held him, rocking gently, Maliko's voice whispering into his ear. "We're all right," she kept saying. "The tunnels will hold us all, the deep winter burrows, deep in all the hills. We're all right." Chapter 4, Part 1. Norway, 0045 hours main day, 1245 hours alter day. They were pulling back. Australia was veering off, Pacific and Atlantic gone off the track. Signy listened to the sigh of relief which ran the bridge as the channels gave good news instead of the disaster which had been healing them. "Look sharp," she snapped. "Damage control, get to it." The bridge wavered in her vision. Alcohol, perhaps, though she doubted it. They had gone through maneuvers enough in recent minutes to sober her. Norway was intact for the most part. Graf was still nominally at helm, but he had let it go to Alterday's Tearshad for a moment and spared a look at telemetry, his face bathed in sweat and set in a long-held grimace of concentration. G went off combat sync and weight became definite, comfortingly stable. Signy stood up, listening to the reports of long scan, testing her reflexes. Stood steadily enough, looked about her. Eyes glanced furtively in her direction, darted back to business. She cleared her throat and punched in general address. "This is Mallory. Looks like Australia has decided to cash it in, too, for the moment. They'll all be pulling back to base and giving Maisian an assist. They'll be taking Pell apart. That was the plan. They'll be headed for Sol Station and Earth, and that was the plan. They'll carry the war there, but without me. That's the way it is. You've got your choice. You've got a choice. If you take my orders, we're headed out our own way, going back to what we've always done. If you want to follow Maisian, I'm sure turning me in would pay your way back to him in style. Right now there can't be anyone else he'd rather have his hands on. You go deal with Maisian if enough of you want to. But for me, no. No one runs Norway but me, so long as I'm in any condition to say so." A murmur came back over calm. Channels were wide open. The murmur took on distinction, rhythm. "Signy, Signy, Signy, Signy." It spread to the bridge. "Signy." Crew rose out of their places. She looked about her, jaw set, and determined that her composure would hold. They were hers. Norway was. Sit down, she shouted at them. You think this is a holiday? They were in danger. Australia might have been diversion. They were moving too fast for reliable scan now, and Atlantic's position and Pacific's were conjecture. Anything could turn up out of the hazed comp projections of long scan, and there were riders loose. Rig for jump, she said. Lay for 58 deep. Keep us out of the way for a while. Her own riders were still at Pell. With luck, they could dodge long enough. Maisie would be too busy to bother. With sense, they would lay low, trusting her, believing in her, that she would come back for them if she possibly could. She meant to. Had to. They desperately needed the protective riders. With any sense at all, the riders would have scattered to the far side of everywhere when they realized Norway was running. She had never yet failed them, and Maisie knew that. She put her mind from it and punched the med station. How's Di? Di's fine, a familiar voice answered for himself. Let me up there. Not on your life. She punched him out and pressed guard one. Our prisoners break any bones in that? All in one piece. Bring them up here. She settled into her cushion, leaned back, watched the progress of events, mapped in her mind their position out of plane of the Pell system, moving out for safe jump at half light speed. Damage control reported in, a compartment voided, a little portion of Norway's gut spilled out into the cold, but not in a personnel section, nothing serious, nothing to impair jump capacity, no dead, no injured. She breathed easier. Time to get out. For close to an hour, the signals of what was going on at Pell had been flashing toward ships that would kick it on until it ended up in Union scan. It was about to become an unhealthy region for bystanders. A light went on her board. She powered her seat about, faced the prisoners who had come in the door aft, hands secured behind them, reasonable precaution in the tight aisles of the bridge. No one got on Norway's bridge, no outsider, until these two. Special cases, Josh Talley and Constantine. Reprieve, she said. Thought you'd both want to know. Perhaps they failed to understand. The looks they gave her were full of misgivings. We've quit the fleet. We're bound for the deep, for good. You're going to live, Constantine. Not for my sake. She gave a breath of a laugh. Hardly, but you get the benefit of it, you see. What's happened to Pell? Your speakers were live, you heard me. That's what's happening to Pell. And now Union has a choice, doesn't it? Save Pell, or chase after Maisie in hot pursuit. And we're getting out of here, so we don't confuse the issue. Help them, Constantine said. For the love of God, wait. Wait and help them. A second time she laughed, looked sourly on Constantine's earnest face. Constantine, what could we do? Norway's taking no refugees. Can't. Let you off? Not under Maisian's nose or Union's. They'd dust us so fast. But it could be done, when they went back after their riders, a pass by Pell. Mallory, Josh said, coming closer to her, as close as the guards would let him. He shook at the restraint of their hands, and she signed so that they let him go. Mallory, there is another choice. Go over. There's a ship, you hear me, named Hummer. You could clear yourself. You could stop this and get amnesty. Something got through to Constantine. The eyes went to Josh, to her, apprehensive. Does he know? She asked Josh. No. Mallory, listen to me. Think, where does it go now? How far and how long? Graf, she said slowly. Graf, we're going back after our riders. Keep us set for jump. When Maisian clears the system, we'll move in crosswise. Maybe shoot this Constantine fellow out where he can take his chances with Union. Freighter might pick him up. Constantine swallowed visibly, his lips bitten to a thin line. You know your friend's Union, she said. Nuck was, you understand. Is a Union agent, special services, probably knows a great deal that could be of use to us in our position. Places to avoid, what null points are known to the opposition. Mallory, Josh pleaded. She shut her eyes. Graf, she said, this Unioner is making sense to me. Am I drunk or does it make sense? They'll kill us, Graf said. So, she said, well, Maisian, it goes on from here. To Saul, to a place where Maisian can find new pickings, gather strength. It's not a fleet anymore. They're looking for loot, things to keep themselves going, for the same thing we are. And all the null points we know, they know. That's uncomfortable, Graf. It is, Graf acknowledged, uncomfortable. She looked at Josh, looked again at Constantine, whose intense face hoped, desperately hoped. She snorted disgust and looked at Graf, at Helm. That Union spotter, lay course that way. They'll jump out of scan when they get wind of us running. Get us contact. We're going to borrow ourselves a Union fleet. We're going to run dead on them, stumbling about here in a tween, Graf muttered, and that was true. Space was wide, but there was a hazard of collision the nearer they ran to that particular vector out of Pell, two intersecting courses relying on long scan. We take our chance, she said. Use the hail. She looked then at Josh Talley, at Constantine, smiled with all the bitterness in her. So I play your game, she said to Josh, my way. Do you know their hailing codes? My memory, Josh said, is full of holes. Think of one. Use my name, Josh said, and Gabriel's. She ordered it, looked long and thoughtfully on the pair of them. Let them go, she said finally to the troopers who guarded them. Let them loose. It was done. She half turned the cushion, averted her eyes momentarily to the screens, and glanced back again at the incredible presence of a Unioner and a Stationer loose on her deck. Find yourselves a secure spot, she said. We're bending an arc in a moment, and maybe worse ahead. Part 2. Pell. Blue Sector 1, number 0475. 0100 hours main day, 1300 hours alter day. The flying feeling hit them from time to time. They huddled together, and some Hysa outside in the corridor moaned in fear, but not those near Sun, her friend. They held to her, so she should not fall, so that she at least should be safe. Even Great Sun was shaken, and staggered in his course. The stars shook in the darkness round about the white bed and the dreamer. "Be not afraid," old Lily whispered, stroking the dreamer's brow. "Be not afraid. Dream we safe, safe." "Turn up the sound, Lily," the dreamer whispered, her eyes tranquil as ever. "Where is Satin?" "I hear," Satin said, easing her way through the others to Lily's place. The sound increased, the human voices which shrieked and wailed over the calm and tried to call out instructions. "It's central," the dreamer said. "Satin, Satin, all of you, listen. They've killed John, harmed Central. They're coming. The Union men, more men with guns, you understand?" "Not come here," Lily insisted, rejoining them. "Satin," the dreamer said, staring at the quaking stars. "I will tell you the way, each turn, each step, and you have to remember. Can you remember so long a thing?" "I storyteller," she declared. "I remember good, Sunshy friend." The dreamer told her step by step, and the thing itself frightened her, but her mind was set on the remembering, each move, each turn, each small instruction. "Go," the dreamer bade her. She rose and hurried, called Bluetooth, called others, every Hysa within the sound of her voice. Part 3. Norway. 0130 hours main day, 1330 hours alter day. Calm sputtered. Vacant long scan suddenly erupted in solid blips. Norway veered tighter into her curve. Signy caught at the console and the cushion with a taste of blood in her mouth. They red-lighted, stress alarms ringing. Josh and Constantine were clinging desperately to a hold halfway down the aisle, lost it, slid. "Norway, Norway speaking. Unioners, hold fire, hold fire. You want to weigh in? Follow me." There was the obligatory silence while calm traveled and caught up to them. "Say further." Words, not shots. "This is Mallory of Norway. I'm going over, you hear me? Run with me a space and I'll fill you in. Maisian's in the process of blowing Pell and running for Saul. It's already started. I've got your agent Joshua Talley and the younger Constantine aboard. You're going to lose yourself a station if you hold off. You don't listen to me and you're going to have yourself an Earth-based war." There was a moment of dead silence from the other side. The Armscomp board was lit and tracking. "This is Azov of Unity. What's your proposal, Norway? And how do we trust you?" "We ran. You've got that signal. I'll lead back in. You run tail guard, Unity, the whole lot of you. Mazian won't stand a fight here or anywhere in the neighborhood. He can't afford it, you understand me? The silence was longer this time. They're tracking with us, Scan advised her. Hard as we can, Mr. Graf. Norway skimmed the edge of disaster, red lighting in little flickers of stress that flesh protested, heart pounding, hands trembling in maintaining necessary control, experienced crew holding up together in sustained agony while combat sink and inertia warred. Calm and steady, hold it together on a long, long curve, keep the velocity they had gathered as much as possible, headed for Pell. They had a tail guard for certain, Union headed right at their backside, all at max, to blow them as readily as they meant to blow Mazian. Come on, she muttered to Graf. Keep our way, hold on to it. We need all we've got. Scan caution, a calm voice advised her, and Graf. Long scan flickered with hazed green and gold, obstacles in their path, still in Comp's memory and shown to be right where Comp remembered them, give or take a freighter's slow progress. Short-haul freighters. They were getting their chatter as received, a squeal of conversation and panic that deepened as they came in on it. Graf threaded them. Norway shot through the interstices on a computer-aimed straight course and red-lighted to home again on Pell. The Unioners came after and all missed with a rush that would stop hearts on the dead slow freighters. A deep howl of terror had reached them, vanished again. Norway, Norway, Norway. Their own comp was sending frantically, and if their ridership survived, they would rally to that summons. Blips flashed red and solid ahead of them, too fast for freighters. Comp howled warnings. Mazian was loose. Europe, India, Atlantic, Africa, Pacific. Where's Australia? She snapped at Graf. That recognition code had not come through with the others. Where of them? Graf must have heard. There was no time for chat. The fleet was massed and collision coursed for them. Their rider ships were locked too, all home to mothers, readied for jump, that grace at least. Mallory, she heard Mazian's voice over calm. Graf heard too, and dropped them in a sickening maneuver that Comp transferred into Armscomp's aim. They ripped a pattern of fire at Europe as fire came back at them and the hull sang. G slammed at them, fighting contrary stresses, and of a sudden fire erupted aft. Union had plowed in, disregarding their safety, not savvy of their comp signals, and hungry for targets. Out, she ordered helm, and Norway maneuvered with all bearable angle, finding no percentage in this fight. Alarms rang. Pell and down below lay ahead, minutes ahead at near sea. They kept veering, comp calculating and recalculating that marginal curve. A carrier blip exploded onto them underside. Norway held to its necessary course, boards flaring red, alarms ringing, collision with the world imminent, and too much speed to dump in time. And of a sudden there were other blips, small and coming hard in a ring nose onto them. Norway, 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 their comp flashed. Their own riders. Keep on, she yelled at Graf over a cheer from the bridge. Comp took the maneuver as hard as the ship could bear, a move that tore at human bodies and made nightmare of half a dozen seconds. They started dumping speed hard, with Australia coming dead at them through the needle's eye of their riders, riderless itself or with none deployed. Barrage, she said, swallowing the taste of blood. The screams flashed terror. It was collision imminent, fore and aft, a sea-approximate ship bearing right down their tail and equally locked in escape curve from Pell. 50-50 what maneuver would impact them, up, down, or straight on. Graf dropped. Topside fired, and Australia whipped over as field sent instruments into chaos. The hull moaned, and the whole ship jolted. Maneuver continued. Suddenly there was breakup on scan, dust screaming over their hull. Where are they? Graf yelled at the scan tech. Signy bit through her lip and winced, sucked at the blood. Australia could have dumped chaff, could have blown. They kept dumping speed, her order unchanged. Cleared Pell, a rider voice came to them, what their own scan was beginning to show as they cleared the danger themselves. And lost a vein. Thank Edgers lost a vein. There was no way they could see. Australia was on long scan. It was the nature of the chaff, they reckoned. Form up, she ordered her riders, feeling more secure with them about Norway like four extra arms. Edger could not risk further damage now, not if a vein was gone, not for any revenge. They're going for jump, she heard. It was a Union voice, none that she knew, a foreign accent. Suddenly there was a vast coldness in her gut, a knowledge that it was all beyond recall. Be thorough, Maisian had taught her, teaching her most that she knew. No half measures. She leaned back in the cushion. All over Norway there was silence. Part 4, Pell, Sector Blue 1, number 0475. Lily, at least, remained. Alicia Lucas-Constantine let her eyes move about the walls, last of all to the small module, part of the molded white of the bed itself. Two lights, one on, one off, one green, one red. Red now. They were on internal systems. Power was threatened. Lily did not know, perhaps. She managed the machines, but what powered them was likely to be mysterious to her. And the Downer's eyes remained calm. Her hand remained gentle, stroking her hair, a remaining contact with the living. Angelo's gifts, the structures about her, had proven as stubborn as her own brain. The screens kept changing, the machines kept pumping life through her veins, and Lily stayed. There was an off switch. If she asked Lily, Lily, ignorant, would push it. But that was cruel to one who believed in her. She did not. Part 5, Norway. Carefully, Damon left his place, felt his way dizzily past the banks of instruments and the text to reach Mallory. He hurt. An arm was torn. His neck ached in its joints. There could not be a soul on Norway spared such misery, the text, Mallory herself. She turned bleak eyes on him from her place at the main boards, powered her cushion about to look at him, nodded slightly. "So you've got your wish," she said. "Union's in. They don't need to track Maisian now. They know for certain where he's gone. I'm betting they'll find a base at Pell valuable. They'll save your station, Mr. Constantine, no question now. And it's high time we got ourselves out of here." "You said," he reminded her quietly, "you'd let me off." Her eyes darkened. "Don't press your luck. So maybe I'll dump you and your Unioner friend on some merchanter when it suits me. If it suits me. Ever." "My home," he said. He had gathered his arguments, but his voice shook, destroying logic. "My station. I belong back there." "You belong nowhere now, Mr. Constantine." "Let me talk to them. If I can get a truce from Union to get close enough, I know the systems. I can handle the central systems. The techs may be dead." "They are dead, aren't they?" She turned her face away, turned the cushion, returning to her own business. He reckoned his danger, leaned forward, and set a hand on the arm of the cushion so that she could not ignore him. A trooper moved, but waited orders. "Captain, you've gone this far. I'm asking you. You're a company officer. You were. One last time. One last time, Captain. Get me back to Pell. I'll talk you out again free. I swear I will." She sat still a very long moment. "You're going to run from here beaten?" he asked her. "Or leave at your own pace?" She turned, and it was not a good thing to look into her eyes. "You looking to take a walk?" "Take me back," he said. "Now, while it matters, or never, because later won't matter. There'll be nothing I can do, and I had as soon be dead." Her lips tightened. For several moments she sat dead still, staring at him. "I'll do what I can, up to a limit. If they make of your truth what I think I will." She brought her hand down on the cushioned arm. "This is mine. This ship, you understand that. These people. I was company. We all were. And Union doesn't want me loose. You're asking for what could turn into a firefight right next to your precious station. Union wants Norway. They want us badly, because they know what we'll do. There's no way I can live, stationer, because I've got no port I'll dare go to. I'll not come in. I never will. None of us will. Graf, set us a quiet course for Pell." Damon drew back, reckoned that was the wisest move at the moment. He listened to the one-sided comm he had accessible, Norway advising the Union fleet that they were moving in. There seemed to be some dispute. Norway argued back. A hand touched his shoulder. He looked around, found Josh there. "I'm sorry," Josh said. He nodded, holding no grudge. Josh had had few choices given him. "They want you all right," Mallory said. "Hand it over to them." "I'll go." "Ignorant," Mallory spat. They'll mind wipe you, you know that. He thought about it, remembered Josh, sitting across from him at a desk and asking for the papers. End of a process Russell's had started. Men came out of it. Josh had. I'll go, he said again. Mallory frowned at him. It's your mind, she said. Till they get their hands on you, at least. And into calm. This is Mallory. We've got ourselves a standoff, Captain. I don't like your terms. There was a long delay, silence from the other end. On scan, Pell showed, with Union ships hovering about it like birds about carrion. One looked to have docked. Long scan showed a scattering of red-dotted gold out by the mines, the short haulers, and the lonely position of one other ship, indicated by a blinking light at the edge of the scope, off-scan, but in Comm's memory. Nothing moved, save for four blips very near Norway, closing into tighter formation. They had come to a relative halt, drifting in time with everything else in the system. This is Azov of Unity, a voice came to them. Captain Mallory, you have leave to dock with your passenger to let him off. Your approach to Pell is accepted, with thanks from the people of Union for your invaluable assistance. We're willing to accept you within the Union fleet as you are, armed and with your present crew. Over. This is Mallory. What assurances has my passenger got? Graf leaned closer to her, held up a finger. Norway resounded to the clang of something against her hull, a lock closing. Damon looked distractedly at scan. Fighter just docked, Josh said at his shoulder. They're gathering the riders in. They can run for jump. Captain Mallory, Azov's voice returned. I have a company representative aboard who will order you to take that action. Heirs can shove it, she said. I'll tell you what I want for what I've got. Docking privileges at Union ports and clear paper, or maybe I let my valuable passenger take a walk. These matters can be discussed later in detail. We have a crisis on Pell. Lives are in jeopardy. You have comp experts. Can it be you can't figure the system? There was another silence. Captain, you'll get what you want. Kindly dock under our safe conduct if you want that paper. There is a situation on this station regarding native workers. They're asking for Constantine. The Downers, Damon breathed. He had a sudden and terrible vision of Downers facing Union troops. You clear your ships back from that station, Captain Azov. Unity can stay docked. I'll come in on the opposite side, and you see to it your ships don't get out of sync with your position. Anything crosses my tail, I'll fire with no questions asked. Granted, Azov answered. Insane, Graf said. Now where's our prophet? They won't come across with that paper. Mallory said nothing. Chapter 5, Part 1. Pell, White Dock, 1-9-53, 0400 hours main day, 1600 hours alter day. The dock workers were Union troops, fatigue-clad, but in green, a surreal sight on Pell. Damon walked down the ramp toward the armored backs of Norway troops who held the margin and guarded the access. Far across the deserted dock, other troopers stood in armor, Unioners. He passed the safe perimeter, passed through the Norway troops, headed out that lonely crossing of the wide, debris-littered decking. Heard disturbance behind him, heard someone coming, and looked back. Josh. Mallory sent me, Josh said, overtaking him. You mind? He shook his head, mortally glad of his company where he was going. Josh reached into his pocket and handed him a spool of tape. Mallory sent it, Josh said. She set up the comp keys, says this might help. He took it, stuffed it into the pocket of his brown company fatigues. The Union escort waited for them, with the troops, black-clad and silver-medaled. He started walking again, appalled as they came closer at the sameness, the beauty of them. Perfect humans, all of a size, all of a type. What are they? He asked of Josh. My kind, Josh said. Less specialized. He swallowed heavily and kept going. The Union troops fell in about them, wordlessly escorted them along the dock. Pell citizens stood, a handful here and there, stared at them as they walked. Constantine, he heard murmured. Constantine. He saw hope in some eyes and flinched from it, knowing how little there was to be had. There was chaos in some areas they passed, whole sections with the lights out, with fans dead, with the stench of fire and bodies lying. G surged a marginal amount, minor instability. No knowing what had happened in the core and life support. There was a time beyond which the systems began to deteriorate beyond recovery, when balances were too far gone. Mindless, with central out, Pell had gone to its local ganglia, nerve centers which were not interconnected, automatic systems that fought for its life. Without regulation and balance, they would pass out of phase, like a body dying. They walked Blue Nine, where other Union forces stood, entered the emergency ramp. Dead here, too, bodies they and their escort filed past in their ascent, a long climb from Nine upward, to an area where armored troopers operated, where they stood facing upward, shoulder to shoulder. They could go no higher. The escort leader turned aside and took them through the door into Two, into the hall lined with financial offices. Another knot of troops and officers stood there. One, silvered with rejuve and bearing a great deal of rank on his chest, turned toward them. With a dull shock, Damon recognized those immediately behind him. Heirs from Earth. And Dayan Jacoby. If he had had a gun in his hands, he would have shot the man. He did not. He stopped there, staring dead at him, and Jacoby's face went to dull crimson. "Mr. Constantine," the officer said. "Captain Azov?" he surmised by the signs of rank. Azov offered his hand. He took it, in bitterness. "Major Talley," Azov said, and offered his hand to Josh. Josh accepted the greeting. "Glad to have you back." "Sir," Josh murmured. "Mallory's information is correct. Mazian's gone for Saul?" Josh nodded. "No deception, sir. I think it's true." "Gabriel?" "Dead, sir. Shot by the Maziani." Azov nodded, frowning, looked at Damon directly again. "I'm giving you a chance," he said. "You think you can get this station back in order?" "I'll try," Damon said, "if you let me up there." "That's the immediate problem," Azov said. "We don't have access up there. Natives have the doors blocked. No knowing what damage they've done in there or what shooting could start with them." Damon nodded slowly, looked back toward the door to the access ramp. "Josh comes with me," he said. "No one else. I'll get Pell settled for you. Your troops can follow, after it's quiet. If shooting starts, you may lose the station, and you wouldn't want that at this stage, would you?" "No," Azov agreed. "We wouldn't want that." Damon nodded and started for the doors. Josh walked beside him. A loudspeaker behind them began to recall troops who came out the doors from the ramp in obedience to the summons, passing them as they entered and walked upward. The top was clear. Doors to Blue One closed. Damon pushed the button. It was dead. Manuel opened it. Downers sat beyond, huddled together, a mass that filled the main hall and the side corridors. "Constantine, man," one exclaimed, scrambling up suddenly, hurt as many of them were hurt, and bleeding from burns. They surged to their feet, reached out hands as he walked in to touch his hands, his body, bobbing in delight and calling, shrieking in their own tongue. He walked through, Josh trailing in his wake, to the hysterical press. There were more of them inside the control center, beyond the windows, on the floor, sitting on the counter, in every available niche. He reached the doors, rapped on the window. Heisa faces lifted, eyes stared, solemn and calm, and of a sudden, brightened. Downers leaped up, danced, bounced, shrieked wild cries, silenced by the glass. "Open the door," he called to them. It was impossible that they could hear him, but he pointed to the switch, for they had it locked from inside. One did. He walked in among them, touched and hugged, touched them in return, and in a sudden rush found a hand locked vice-like on his, clasping it to a furry breast. "I satin," the Heisa said to him, grinning. "Me eyes warm, warm, Constantine man." And on the other side, Bluetooth. That broad grin and shaggy coat he knew, and hugged the downer. "Your mother send," Bluetooth said. "She all right, Constantine man. She say, lock doors, stand here, not move. Make they send, find Constantine, man. Make all right be up above." He caught his breath, touched furred bodies, went to the central console with Josh behind him. Human bodies lay there on the floor. John Lucas was one, shot through the head. He sat down at the main board, began pushing keys, rebuilding. Took out the spool of tape and hesitated. Mallory's gift, to Pell, to Union. The tape might contain anything, traps for Union, a final destruct trigger. He wiped a hand across his face, finally made up his mind, and fed the leader in. The machinery sucked it in, beyond recall. Boards began to clear, lights flickering to greens. There was a stir among the Hysa. He looked above him, at troops reflected in the glass, standing in the doorway with rifles leveled, at Josh behind him, who had turned to face him. "Hold it where you are," Josh snapped at them. They did, and rifles lowered. Maybe it was the face, the look that was Union's lab-born, or the voice that expected no argument. Josh turned his back on them and stood with his hands on the back of Damon's chair. Damon kept at work, spared a second glance to the reflecting glass. "Need a comtech," he said. "Someone to get on public channels and talk. Get me someone with a Pell accent. We're all right. They knocked some of the storage out, slagged some records, but we don't really need those, do we?" "They won't know one name from the other," Josh said softly. "Will they?" "No," he said. The adrenaline that had gotten him this far was wearing off. He found his hand shaking, looked aside as a Unioner tech seated himself at comm. "No," he said, rose, and started over to object. Troops leveled guns. "Hold off," Josh said, and the officer in charge hesitated. Then Josh himself glanced aside and stepped back. There was another presence in the doorway, Azov and his entourage. "Private message, Mr. Constantine?" "I need to get crews at their jobs," Damon said. "They'll move at a voice they know." "I'm sure they would, Mr. Constantine, but no. Stay away from comm. Let our techs handle it." "Sir," Josh said quietly, "may I intervene?" "Not in this matter," Azov said. "Keep at non-public work, Mr. Constantine." Damon drew a quiet breath, walked back to the console he had left, and carefully sat down. More and more troops had come in. The Hysa crowded back against the walls and onto the counters, chattering soft alarm among themselves. "Get these creatures out of here," Azov said. "Now." "Citizens," Damon said, turning his chair to look at Azov. "Pell citizens. Whatever they are." "Pell," Mallory's voice came over calm. "Stand by for undocking." "Sir?" the Union comtech asked. Azov signaled for silence. Damon leaned and tried to hit an alarm. Rifles leveled, and he thought better of it. Azov himself went to comm. "Mallory," Azov said, "I'll advise you to stay put." A moment's silence. "Azov," the voice returned softly. "Somehow I thought there was no honor among thieves." "Captain Mallory, you are attached to the Union fleet under Union orders. Accept them or stand in mutiny." Again a silence. And more silence. Azov gnawed at his lip. He reached past the comtech and keyed in his own numbers. "Captain Mize, Norway refuses orders. Move your ships out a little." And on Mallory's channel. "You take our offer, Mallory, or there's no port. You can rip loose and you can run, but you'll be number one priority for our ships in Union space. Or you can run join Mazian, or you can go with us against him." "Under your orders?" "Your choice, Mallory. Free pardon or be hunted down." Dry laughter came back. "How long would I stay in command of Norway once I let Unioners on my deck? And how long would my officers or any of my troops live?" "Pardon, Mallory. Take it or leave it." "Like your other promises." "Pell Station," a new voice broke in, disturbed. "This is Hammer. We've got a contact. Pell Station, do you read? We've got a contact." And another. "Pell Station, this is the Merchanter fleet. This is Quen of Estelle. We're coming in." Damon looked at long scan that was rapidly compensating for new data, reckoning a signal 2 hours old. Aline. Alive and with the Merchanters. He crossed the room to comm, caught a rifle barrel in the stomach, and staggered against the counter. He could get himself shot. Could do that at this late hour. He looked at Josh. Aline would have been in reception of Pell transmissions that showed trouble 4 hours ago, 2 hours inbound. Aline would ask questions. If he gave wrong answers, if she got no response from known voices, surely, surely she would stay out. Eyes tuned to scan, one man at first, and at that expression others. Not one blip now, but a dusting of them, sent in as other input reached them. A mass, a swarm, an incredible horde of merchanters moving in on them. Damon looked and leaned against the counter watching it come, a smile spreading across his face. "They're armed," he said to Azov. "Captain, they're long haulers, and they'll be armed." Azov's face was rigid. He snatched up a mic and patched it in. "This is Azov of Union Flagship Unity, Fleet Commander. Pell is now a Union military zone. For your own safety, stay out. Ships which intrude will be met with fire." An alarm started blinking, a bored flashing alarm across the center. Damon looked at the lights and his heart began to speed. White Dock was warning of imminent undocking. Norway. He turned and hit that channel while the trooper stood paralyzed in the confusion. "Norway, stay put. This is Constantine. Stay put." "Ah, we're just letting you know, Pell Central. Warships might make quite a mess of those merchanters, armed or not. But they'll have professional help if they want it. Repeat." Aline's distance-delayed voice came over calm. "We're coming in for dock. We've been monitoring your transmissions. The Merchanters Alliance claims Pell, and we hold it to be neutral territory. We assume that you will respect this claim. We suggest immediate negotiation, or every merchanter in this fleet may well withdraw from Union territory entirely. Earthward. We don't believe this would be the first choice of any parties involved." There was silence for a very long moment. Azov looked at the screens on which blips spread like plague. The merchanter Hammer had ceased to be distinct, signal obscured by the reddening points. "We have a basis for discussion," Azov said. Damon drew a long, slow breath and let it go. Part 2. Pell, Red Dock, 1953, 0530 hours main day, 1730 hours alter day. She came, with an escort of armed merchanters, onto the dock. She was pregnant and walked slowly, and the merchanters about her took no chances exposing her to hazard on the wide dock. Damon stood by Josh on the Union side as long as he could bear, and finally risked himself and walked out, not certain whether either side would let him through to her. Rifles in merchanters' hands leveled at him, a nervous ring of threat, and he stopped, alone in that empty space. But she saw him, and her face lit, and merchanters moved, ordered aside left and right, until their ranks drank him in and he could reach her. Merchanter, and back with her own, and long off the solid deck of Pell. In the back of his mind had been doubt, a preparation for changes, that vanished with a look at her face. He kissed her, held on to her as she did him, afraid of hurting her she held him so tightly. He stood there with the whole horde of armed merchanters about them in a glittering haze, and inhaled the scent and the reality of her, kissed her again, and knew that they had no time for talking, for questions, for anything. "Took me quite a roundabout to get home," she murmured. He laughed, madly, softly, looked about him and back at the Union forces, sober again. "You know what happened here?" "Some. Most, maybe. We've been sitting out there a long time, waiting a point of no choice." She shivered, tightened her arm about him. "Thought we'd lost it. Then Mazian did pull out, and we moved from that moment. Union's got troubles, Damon. Union's got to move on to Sol, and they've got to do it with all their ships intact." "You can bet they do," he said. "But don't leave this dock. What's got to be said, whatever talking you do with them, insist on doing here, on the dock. Don't walk into any small space where Azov can get troops between you and your ships. Don't trust him." She nodded, understood. "We're just the edge of it, Damon. I speak for the merchanter interest. They want a neutral port, the way things are going, and Pell's it. I don't think Pell objects." "No," he said, "Pell doesn't. Pell's got some house cleaning to do." He drew his first whole breath in minutes and followed her glance across the dock at Azov, at Josh standing with Union troops, expecting approach. "Bring a dozen with you and keep the rest guarding that access. Let's see what Azov's idea of reason encompasses." "The release," Aline said firmly and softly, leaning on the table with one arm, "of the ship Hummer to the Olvig family, of Swan's Eye to its proper owners, of any other merchanter ship confiscated for use by Union military. The strongest possible condemnation of the seizure and use of Genevieve. You may protest you are not empowered to grant it, but you have the power of military decisions. On that level, sir, the release of the ships, or embargo. We do not recognize your organization. That, Damon interrupted, rests with Union Council. Pell recognizes their organization, and Pell is independent, Captain, willing to afford you a port at the moment, but with means to deny it. I would hate to take that decision. We have a mutual enemy, but you would be tied up here in long unpleasantness, and it might spread. There were, from the other side of the table, set up on the open dock and ringed by opposing semicircles of merchanters and troops, frowns. It's in our interest, Azov admitted, to see that this station doesn't become a base for Maziani operation. And that we cooperate in your protection, without which you don't stand great chance for all your threats, Mr. Constantine. Mutual necessity, Damon said levelly. Rest assured that none of Mazian's ships will ever be welcome at Pell. They are outlaws. We have done you a service, Aline said. Merchanter ships have already headed for Sun far in advance of Mazian. One early enough to get there ahead of him. Not much, but a little. Sol Station will be warned before he arrives. Azov's face relaxed in surprise. That of the man beside him, Delegate Ayers, froze, took on a sudden smile with the glistening of tears in his eyes. My gratitude, Ayers said. Captain Azov, I'd propose close consultation and quick moves. There seems reason for it, Azov said. He pushed back from the table. The station is secure. Our business is finished. Ours are valuable. If Saul is going to prepare a reception for this outlaw, we should be there to follow it up from behind. Pell, Damon said quietly, will gladly assist your undocking, but the merchanter ships you've appropriated stay. We have crew aboard them. They come. Take your crew. Those ships are merchanter property, and they remain. So does Josh Talley. He's a citizen of Pell. No, Azov said. I don't leave one of my own at your asking. Josh, Damon said, looking to the side and behind him, where Josh stood with other Union troops, at last inconspicuous among others, likewise perfect. How do you feel about it? Josh's eye slid past him, perhaps to Azov, returned to a forward stare. He said nothing. Take your troops and your ships, Damon said to Azov. If Josh stays, that's his choice. Take Union presence off this station. You'll be received for docking hereafter by request and by permission of the station master's office. It will be granted. But if time is of value to you, I'd suggest you take that offer and agree to it. Azov scowled. He signaled his troop officer, who ordered the units to form up. They walked away, headed for the upcurving horizon for Blue Dock, where Unity was berthed. And Josh was still standing there, alone. Aline got up and hugged him awkwardly, and Damon clapped him on the shoulder. Stay put here, he said to Aline. I've got a Union ship to get undocked. Josh, come on. Neihards, Aline said to those nearest her. See that they reach Central in good order. They went behind the Union forces, took the Niner corridor as the Unioners headed for their ship, started to run. In the corridors there were doors open, the folk of Pell standing there to observe. Some began to shout, to wave, cheers for this last merchanter's occupation. They're ours, someone yelled. They're ours. They took the emergency ramp, came upward at a run. Downers met them in it, scampered along, bounced and bounded, and chattered welcomes. The whole spiral echoed with downer shrieks and squeals and human yells from the corridors outside as the word spread from level to level. A few Unioners passed on the way down, headed out at instructions over helmet comm, likely feeling very conspicuous where they were. They came out in Blue One. Downers were back in occupation of Central and grinned welcome at them through the wide open doors. You friends, Bluetooth said. You friends all? It's all right, Damon assured him, and worked his way past a crowd of anxious brown bodies to settle himself at the main board. He looked back at Josh, at the merchanters. Anyone here who knows this kind of comp? Josh settled into place by him. One of the Neihards took comm. Another one settled into another comp post. Damon keyed through to comm. Norway, he said. You've got first release. I trust you'll ease out without provocations. We don't need complications. Thank you, pal, Mallory's dry voice came back. I like your priorities. Hurry it down there. Have your own troops on dock you. You can come in again when we're stable and pick them up. Agreed? They'll be safe. Pell Station, another voice cut in. Azov's. Agreement specified no welcome from Aziani. This one is ours. Damon smiled. No, Captain Azov. This ship is ours. We're a world and a station, a sovereign community, and apart from the merchanters who are not residents here, we maintain a militia. Norway constitutes the fleet of down below. I'll thank you to respect our neutrality. Constantine, Mallory's voice warned him, on the edge of anger. Undock and stand off, Captain Mallory. You'll stay put until the Union fleet has vacated our space. You're in our traffic pattern and you take our orders. Orders received, she answered finally. Stand by. We're going to pull back and deploy riders. Unity, see that you lay a straight course out of here. And give my regards to Mazian. Your own merchanters, Azov said, are going to be the ones to suffer from this decision, Pell Station. You're harboring a vessel that has to prey on shipping to live. Merchanter ships. Get your tail out of here, Union, Mallory shot back. Trust at least that Mazian can't double back on you. He won't dock at Pell while I'm in the area. Go attend your own business. Quiet, Damon said. Captain, move out. There was a flurry of lights. Norway was loose. Part 3. Pell System. You two? Blath asked Riley. Vittorio adjusted his hold on his meager sackful of belongings, awkwardly hand-over-handed his way in the narrow access, Null G, in line with the rest of the crew which had held Hummer. It was cold down here and dimly lit. There was a vibration, the action of a shuttle tube grappling to their lock. Don't see that I have much choice, he said. I'm not staying to talk to the merchanters, sir. Blas gave a twisted smile, addressed himself to the lock, which opened to take them out a narrow tube and into the waiting warship. The dark gaped for them. Unity moved, a steady acceleration. Air sat in the cushioned comfort of the Unity's top-level main room, carpeted, severely modern, with Jacoby beside him. Screens apprised them of their course, a whole array of screens showing numbers and images. They made it clear through an avenue opened by merchanter vessels, a narrow tunnel through the surrounding horde, and finally Azov spared time to look in on them by vid-link, occupying one of the screens. All right? Azov asked of them. Going home, Ayres said softly, self-satisfied. I'll propose something to you, Captain. That at this moment Saul and Union have more in common than not. That while you're sending that inevitable courier back to Cytene, you include a proposal from my side. Cooperation for the duration. Your side has no interest in the beyond, Azov said. Captain, I suggest to you that that interest may be on the verge of awakening, and that it would be far from Union's advantage for Union to be less forward in offering Earth its protection than the Merchanters' Alliance is going to be. After all, the Alliance has already sent Earth its messenger, so Saul can pick and choose, can't it? The Merchanters' Alliance, Union, or Mazian. I suggest a discussion of the matter, a renegotiation. It seems that neither of us has the authority to cede Pell, and I hope that I can give my government favorable recommendations toward yours. Aline came, with a great crowd of merchanters, stood in the doorway of battle-scarred Central, while Downers scampered aside in mild alarm. But Bluetooth and Satin knew her, and danced and touched her for joy. Damon rose from his place, took her hand, gave her a place to sit near him and Josh. I don't feel much like long climb, she said, breathing hard. We've got to get the lift system working. He found time simply to look at her. Looked back to the screen by his own console, at a face lying sideways on white sheets, at tranquility and dark, lively eyes. Alicia Lucas smiled, the faintest of movements. Paul just got through, he said to Aline. Got word to and from down below. A crippled probe appealing to Mallory for rescue out of main base, and an operator somewhere removed from base saying Emilio and Maliko are safe. Couldn't confirm it. Things are badly torn up down there. The operator's base is somewhere in the hills, but evidently everyone was under cover and all right. I need to get a ship of our own down there, and probably some medics. Neihardt, Aline said, looking up at her companions. A big merchanter nodded. "Anything you need," he said. "We'll get it down there." Chapter 6, Part 1. Pell, Green Sector 1, 1-29-53, 2200 hours main day, 1000 hours alter day. It was a bizarre gathering, even for Pell, in the rearmost section of the concourse, in the area where separate illusory screens afforded a little privacy to parties. Damon sat with Aline's hand locked firmly in his, and amid the table, the red eye of a portable camera, a presence in itself, for he had wanted her to be among them tonight, as she had always been with his father, and with all of them on family occasions. Emilio was by him, and Maliko, and Josh on his left, and next to Maliko and Emilio a small clutch of downers, who obviously found chairs uncomfortable, and yet delighted in the chance to try them, and to sample special delicacies, fruits out of season. At the far end of the table, the merchanter Nyhart and Signe Mallory, the latter with an armed escort who relaxed sociably in the shadows. About them was music, the slow dance of stars and ships across the walls. The concourse had settled somewhat back into routine. Not quite the same, but nothing was. "I'll be putting out again," Mallory said. "Tonight, staying was a courtesy." "Where?" Nyhart asked bluntly. "Just do as I advise you, merchanter. Designate your ship's alliance. You're off limits. Besides, I've got a full load of supplies for now." "You'll not stray far," Damon wished her. "Frankly, I don't trust that Union won't try something yet. I'd just as soon know you're in the vicinity." She laughed humorlessly. "Take a vote on that. I don't walk Pell corridors without a guard." "All the same," he said, "we want you close." "Don't ask me my course," she said. "That's my business. I've places. I've sat still long enough." "We're going to try a run to Viking," Nyhart said, "and see what kind of reception we'll get in about another month." "Might be interesting," Mallory conceded. "Luck to us all," Damon said. Part 2. Pell, Blue Dock, 1:30:53, 1:30 hours main day, 13:30 hours alter day. The hour was well into alter day, the docks nearly deserted in this non-commercial zone. Josh moved quickly, with the nervousness he always had outside someone's protective escort on Pell, with the vulnerable feeling that the few strollers on the dockside might know him. Heise saw him, stared solemn-eyed. The Pell dock crew by berth 4 surely recognized him, and the troops on guard there did, rifles angled toward him. "Need to talk to Mallory," he said. The officer was a man he knew, Di Jantz. Jantz gave an order, and one of the troopers slung his rifle into carry and motioned him ahead up the access ramp, walked behind him through the tube and into the lock, past the quick traffic of troops this way and that in the noisy corridor and suiting room. They took the lift up, into the main central corridor, where a crew hastened about last-minute business. Familiar noises, familiar smells, all of it. She was on the bridge. He started to go in, and the guard inside stopped him, but Mallory looked his way from her place near the command post and curiously signaled both guards permission. "Damon send you?" she asked, when he stood before her. He shook his head. She frowned, set her hand consciously or unconsciously on the gun at her side. "So what brings you?" "Thought you might need a comp tech, someone who knows Union side, inside and out." She laughed outright. "Or a shot when I'm not looking?" "I didn't go with Union," he said. "They'd have redone the tapes, given me a new past, sent me out, maybe to Sol Station, I don't know. But to stay on Pell right now, I can't do that. The stationers know me, and I can't live on a station, not comfortably. Nothing another mind wipe can't cure. I want to remember. I've got something, the only real thing, all that I value." "So you go off and leave it?" "For a while," he said. "You talked to Damon about this?" "Before coming down here. He knows. Aline does." She leaned back against the counter, looked him up and down thoughtfully, arms folded. "Why Norway?" He shrugged. "No station calls, are there? Except here." "No," she smiled thinly. "Just here. Sometimes."